Introduction. Great deal of soul searching was necessary in making the decision to write this book. As you can readily imagine, it's a subject wide open for ridicule and ostracizing. Indeed, I'm sure this is one of the biggest reasons why more people have not made their experiences known. As far as I'm concerned, the information I know relating to Project Preserve Destiny, PPD, specifically, has absolutely no impact on national security. Perhaps if they had been more forthcoming with the truth and made me aware of a greater goal that did impact national security, I wouldn't be coming forward today. But they didn't. So here we are. The story I've documented in this book is an authentic first-level account of the existence of aliens. It is a story of my personal experiences as an intuitive communicator with the United States Air Force, USAF. While working for the National Security Agency, NSA, my going public with this story will hopefully be considered by historians of the future as the catalyst that opened the gate to the flow of relevant and concrete information regarding the government's role in the cover-up of alien-related information. I think one of the numerous reasons more people have not come forward is obvious: fear of prosecution. Another reason why someone would think twice about revealing any information is that there is no physical evidence readily accessible that would enable someone to verify the validity of their story. So, in coming forward with my story, I risk not being believed and outright ridiculed. I have decided to take that chance because I believe the story should be told, and someone from the first level must take that first step to get the avalanche of information started. Actually, the release of alien information into the public domain has been a gradual process. I'm convinced that by going public with what I know, I will help turn what has been a trickle of information up until now into an avalanche of other first level accounts. At least, that is my hope. What do I mean by first-level account? This is explained in more detail within the context of my experience. For now, it's a system designed so that the guardians of information can exert control over, and keep hidden, certain levels of information. Is projects dealing with alien contact and technology. When someone is assigned to an alien project, they are also assigned to the collateral black mission, cover mission. One of the reasons for this is if someone were to reveal any alien information, by extension, they would most likely reveal something about the cover project, and it would be on this basis that someone would be prosecuted for divulging classified information. By setting it up this way, the government is able to effectively silence and discredit someone without ever having to acknowledge the existence of the alien project. Hopefully, I will avoid this scenario by methodically unfolding my story. So, while preparing this book for release, I had to take certain precautions regarding legitimately classified information. My regular Air Force job was as an electronic intelligence specialist. The Air Force describes this career field as analyzing electromagnetic energy for intelligence value. In more simple terms, I would analyze the internal characteristics of energy emanating from a piece of equipment, such as a radar, to see what kind of transmission it emitted and determine exactly how the actual signal would operate so we could identify the radar's function. People in this career field are called ELINT specialists, or ELINTers. Some of what I did as an ELINTer isn't any more classified than the secret level, or below. However, some of the things I worked on would be considered in the above top secret realm. It is in this realm that I start treading on thin ice. This is heavily sensitive territory, for which the danger of unauthorized disclosure lurks around every corner. The challenge I've been presented with has been to share with the reader information pertaining to the Grey Project without threatening the existence of the above top secret projects I may have been familiar with. Careful has become my middle name concerning my regular Air Force duties. So you'll notice that few details regarding my regular job in the Air Force are present within the story. Even though I feel I have brought the PPD aspects of my role in the USAF to light without revealing any other collateral information, I want it to always be known that my going public with this book is not has not and never will be an attempt to undermine the security of our nation. Everything I say regarding my experiences is relevant only to my involvement with PPD. PPD has nothing to do with national security and everything to do with a government who feels the need to protect us from a particular area of alien gathered information. Perhaps other alien projects are classified for good reasons, I don't know. I also had difficulty relating the sequence of events in relation to where I was stationed. Even though the actual geographical locations of where I have been stationed are not classified, relating the bases to certain other information I write about is. Hence the references to PPD base number 1 and PPD base number 2 within the story. When I first learned of Project Preserve Destiny and my role in it, I was very proud. Imagine being in a position of knowing that aliens actually do exist. However, to make matters practically unbearable, you knew you couldn't tell anyone. More importantly, even if you did tell someone, you risked being thought of as crazy. Well, the time has come. I have finally decided to make this story known, regardless of what people will think of my sanity. It will be interesting to learn what the world will do with this information, if they even listen. Finding out we are not alone in this universe is exciting, but the other things you learn may not be so enchanting. There is always a price to pay for knowledge. The meeting the clock on the wall of the visitors center said it was exactly 3 p.m. yet there was no sign of Captain White. Where was he? Was I at the wrong entrance? Okay, I said to myself. Be patient. You're just a little nervous, that's all. As I waited for Captain White to arrive, my mind couldn't help but search out a reason for this impromptu meeting. The drive to Maryland had taken 18 long, grueling hours. So when the Holiday Inn came into sight, it was not a moment too soon. I checked in and dragged myself up to my room. Without unpacking, I fell on the bed for some much-needed rest. I had just fallen into a deep sleep when the phone rang. Hello. I was in that stage of sleep that, when awakened, you have no idea where you are or how you got there. Sergeant Sherman, the caller asked. Still confused, I answered, yeah, that's me. This is Captain White, from the training group. I'd like for you to meet me at the main entrance to the NSA building at 1500 hours. I need to go over some things with you. I had come to the National Security Agency, NSA, outside of Washington, D.C., to attend an intermediate electronic intelligence class. It was a course needed in my development as an electronic intelligence, ELINT, analyst in the U.S. Air Force. There were two of us from my base that were selected to attend this class, so I assumed Captain White wanted to see us both. Would you like me to bring Sergeant Ham, Captain? No, he said. I'll only need to speak with you. Do you know which entrance I'm talking about? I had never been to the NSA complex, so I told him I didn't. I quickly grabbed a pen and wrote down the directions. I'll see you at 1500 hours. He said before he hung up. I immediately looked at my watch and it was already 1,300 hours. I had been asleep for only 3 hours and my body was pleading for more. As I walked to the bathroom, I started to wonder, why did the captain want to talk to me, and me only? I thought about the possibilities. I was the highest ranking person attending the course from my base. Maybe he just required a representative from each of the bases attending the school. But why the odd break in protocol? Officers didn't usually call enlisted personnel directly and ask to meet with them at their office. Oh well, I said out loud to myself as I stepped into the shower. If the captain needs to see me, I guess I'll find out why soon enough. I did. As I sat in the visitors' center waiting for Captain White, I couldn't help but notice the guard at the customer service desk. When I pulled security duty earlier in my Air Force career, we always referred to the civilian guards as Rentac Ops. Looking at the guard sitting at the counter in front of me, I could see why. His blue shirt had what Air Force security police would call summer creases, meaning some are here, some are there. I guess proper ironing techniques weren't included in the Rent-A-Cop's How-To manual. A tall black man attracted my attention as he walked through the visitor's center glass door. He was about my own height, 6'2", slender build and in his late 20s. His black hair was cut high and tight, marine style, which suited his personality. He was decisive in his actions, with no wasted energy. As he stuck out his hand towards me, he said, "Sergeant Sherman, I assume?" Immediately intimidated by his presence, I grabbed his hand with all the strength I could muster and shook it. "Yes, sir." "Have you been waiting long?" "I've been so busy, running around, I'm lucky I made it when I did." "No, sir, I've only been here a few minutes," I politely lied. I had actually been there for 15 minutes, not counting the 15 minutes it took me to find a parking space and then the correct entrance into the building. The NSA has a sprawling parking lot with spaces seemingly miles away from the building. In my hectic search for a parking space, I became confused, lost my bearings, and couldn't find the entrance where Captain White had told me to meet him. It's a wonder I wasn't late as well. "Great. Do you know if your security clearances are here yet?" he asked. "I'm not sure, sir. I just drove in today, so I don't think so." When someone was sent away from their home base, for school or to work temporarily, you were said to be on temporary duty or just TDY. When you needed access to classified information while on TDY, proof of your security clearances had to be received by the TDY host base prior to being granted unescorted entry into any restricted areas. The military was notorious for not getting security clearances where they needed to be and or not getting them there on time. After checking for the status of my clearances at the visitor's desk, the rent-a-cop confirmed that they hadn't arrived. The captain would have to escort me into the building. "Did you find the parking space okay?" the captain asked, making small talk as we waited for the guard to fill out the paperwork I needed to sign. "Oh yeah, no problem," I lied again, not wanting to create any more conversation than was necessary. I was getting more and more anxious. Why had he called me for a private meeting? That question was weighing heavily on my mind as we left the visitors' center and made our way through the turnstiles into the most formidable and secretive government agency ever to be formed, the National Security Agency. I had heard many stories about the National Security Agency, dubbed the Puzzle Palace by many. When I found out I was going to attend classes there, I read everything I could find on the subject. I learned that the National Security Agency was originated in response to a memorandum sent by President Harry Truman on October 24, 1952 to Secretary of State Dean Acheson and Defense Secretary Robert Lovat. This memo placed the NSA under the authority of the Secretary of Defense, and charged it with monitoring and decoding any signal transmission relevant to the security of the United States. In layman's terms, the NSA eavesdropped on the world through all kinds of sources, overtly and covertly. I also learned that, due to security concerns, the construction of any structures surrounding the main NSA building complex was restricted to a certain predetermined height. The rationale for this construction regulation, it explained, was to prevent any adversarial agency from taking up residence in a location that would provide them a vantage point for audio and visual surveillance. For obvious reasons, this would make the world's most prolific intelligence agency very uncomfortable. Many sources jokingly referred to it as no such agency because of the level of secrecy surrounding the organization itself. As we walked down the stark hallways, my preconceived ideas of how the interior of the hallowed halls of the NSA complex would look fell far short of reality. The hallways were bland expanses of raised tile floors and painted walls. I don't know exactly what I was expecting, but somehow it wasn't what I was seeing. We walked for miles, it seemed, down numerous hallways before we reached Captain White's office. The sign next to the door, in small unassuming letters, read, "Captain White, do." "This is it," he said as he swiped his card through the card reading device mounted on the wall below his nameplate. He punched his personal code into the numbered keypad located on the face of the device. A green light and inaudible click signaled the door had unlocked. As we stepped through the door, I could see another door in front of us. The captain made sure the door behind us was secured, then turned and placed his forehead against what appeared to be a visor. I immediately recognized it as a retina scanner. My understanding was that they were still experimental, but this one appeared to work fine. After a few seconds of scan time, we heard a tone. I was already full of questions about the security measures, but I bit my tongue, not wanting to sound inexperienced. I had never come across such tight security procedures to get into an office within an already tightly secured building. My mind was becoming more and more active with questions. I am a naturally curious person, so I had to actively suppress my curiosity and hold my questions for a more appropriate time. We entered a room appointed with fine furnishings. The room was square, perhaps 20 feet by 20 feet. Along the right wall was a brown leather couch with a few chairs in the corner. The captain's desk stood in the middle of the room. On the left wall was a built-in sink with a miniature refrigerator set into the cabinetry. Captain White motioned for me to sit in the chair facing his desk. "Would you like something to drink, Sergeant Sherman?" he asked as I sat down. "No, thank you, sir, I am fine." In reality, I was dying of thirst, but I still wasn't comfortable accepting any of his entreaties. "Okay," he said as he sat down behind his desk. "How was your trip out here? Did you get to see any of the sights on the way out, or did you drive straight through?" I couldn't help but wonder why he was dragging this meeting on with small talk. The longer he waited to share with me the reason for this meeting, the more nervous I became. "I drove straight through, only stopping for gas," I answered him. "Well, you must be pretty tired then. Let me get this out of the way so you can get back to the hotel and get some sleep." "Yes." I could almost hear the sigh of relief escape my mouth. I was tired, and had been running on adrenaline for some time. You've probably surmised by now that this meeting is a little unusual. "Actually, my curiosity has been piqued," I said as calmly as I could, not wanting to let him know how nervous I was. "I can imagine. I've been in the position of telling people this a few times now, and there's never been a way to put it lightly. As you know, you've been sent here to go through course EA-280, but you will also be going through another school while you're here." In one quick moment, all my anxieties vanished. He just wanted to tell me about another class. But no sooner had my anxieties disappeared than they reappeared, only tenfold. "To put it bluntly, Sergeant Sherman, in the summer of 1960 your mother was visited by what the world commonly refers to as aliens." "Sir?" was the only thing I could manage to say. Random tests were being conducted on the general populace at the time to determine compatibility. I was in a state of utter disbelief when I asked in a weak, cracking voice, "Compatibility?" "Yes. Actually, it's a long story. I'll try to explain as much as I can, but there's much that I don't even know. In a nutshell, you've been given an interesting ability through what we call genetic management." "My mother, genetic management, compatibility, long story." My mind was reeling with all this new information. I came in here expecting to find out about a deployment for an exercise, or perhaps that I had incorrectly filled out my travel voucher, but not this. As though the captain could sense how much shock I was experiencing, he said, "I know all this is going to be hard to swallow. But I can assure you it's true." All at once I became overwrought with a sense of amazement and curiosity. Captain White sat in front of me, calm and relaxed, telling me that aliens existed as if he were merely sharing with me the topic of an obscure news item he read in yesterday's paper. If this was true, then all those years of boyhood wondering had just been validated, in one fell swoop. There was life elsewhere and we were not alone in this vast universe. Was I dreaming? Could this really be happening? I had heard rumors through the classified grapevine of alien craft experiments in Nevada, and the testing of new weapons based on alien technology. But this was no longer a rumor. This was reality, my reality. All these things were going through my mind as the captain continued with his remarkable revelations. I mentioned you have a unique ability. We call it intuitive communications. It's an ability to communicate through the intuitive manipulation of your mind. There have been a handful of people since this ability was perfected that have utilized this skill within the military establishment. There are many others throughout the general world populace that currently have this ability, but until it is brought out by proper exercise methods, it lays dormant. By this time, I had immersed myself into what the captain was telling me, soaking up every detail. I found myself from one moment to the next believing and then disbelieving what he was saying. How could all this be kept from the public so thoroughly? Even in the tabloids, where people routinely gave birth to three-headed aliens, you never once heard of intuitive communicators. I'm getting ahead of myself a little. Let me show you some background on what I'm talking about. He got up to pull down a screen from the ceiling above the refrigerator. As I shook my head in amazement, Captain White looked at me with a slight smile on his face and continued with his story. And what a story it was. Reality check. Captain White spoke slowly at first, as if to gently nudge the unbelievable truth in my direction. In 1947, the US government made contact with an alien species. Today, we commonly refer to them as Greys. Because of this contact, we have learned many things. Some of the things we learned were good, and some not so good. And it is one of those not so good things that has ultimately brought you here, Sergeant Sherman. My mind was still swimming as I asked, "So what am I doing here, sir?" The captain continued with the story as if he hadn't heard me. In 1960, an experiment was given a great deal of attention within Level 1 circles. "Excuse me, sir," I interrupted. "What is Level 1? I was just getting there. Level 1 is a classification category that allows us to compartmentalize any and all gray information. You'll hear more about this at your security indoctrination later." "I see." The captain went on. "The experiment that I am referring to was, and still is, named Project Preserve Destiny. It started in 1960 and was fully operational by 1963. It was a genetic management project with the sole purpose of cultivating human offspring so that they would have the ability to communicate with the Greys. Your mother was initially abducted in 1960 for tests, then again in 1963 for the actual genetic procedure while you were in the womb. Each moment in Captain White's office was more shocking than the last. In the seconds after each new revelation, my mind went through utter disbelief, followed by skepticism, then outright curiosity. How could this be happening to me? Aliens were the made-up fantasies of Hollywood filmmakers and science fiction book writers. They had no place within the concrete, tangible realm of the US military. Yet, here I sat in front of a US Air Force captain with two connected silver bars on each shoulder, listening to what most people would recognize as a great little alien story. At some point in our conversation, I can't remember exactly when, I became a believer. First, out of my own desire to believe, then ultimately in my inability to avoid the information being presented to me. "Your abilities are a product of Project Preserve Destiny, Sergeant Sherman." I was about to ask a question when the captain directed my attention back to the screen, as if to say, "Not yet, there's more." I was expecting pictures of aliens and other science fiction type of stuff. Instead, I was treated to a healthy dose of facts and bullet statements. In January of 1963, the first successfully managed embryo was produced under PPD supervision. There were only a certain number of ENTCOM-capable personnel required, hence the genetic management phase of PPD was terminated in March of 1968. I accurately surmised that ENTCOM was a shortened name for intuitive communications. I later learned that I would be referred to as an IC, because ENTCOM abilities really cannot be fully utilized, biologically, until the subject is approximately 25 years old or older. We have just recently begun the recruiting and training phase of PPD. because the selection process in 1960 was based on carefully calculated statistical demographics, they were able to accurately predict that a certain percentage of those offspring would choose the military as a career. I had a million questions running through my mind by now, so I just grabbed one and spit it out. Did my mother conceive me or was I implanted? Even as I said the words, I couldn't believe the conversation I was having. Several hours ago I was trying to get a non-smoking hotel room for my prolonged stay in Maryland, and now I was inquiring as to whether I was naturally conceived or placed in my mother's womb by an alien race. It was almost too much to process all at once. Captain White responded in a reassuring tone, "Everyone I've had to tell this to has had the same concern at some point in the conversation. Rest assured, you are 100% human. Your conception was as normal as any other person's. I distinctly remember being greatly relieved to find out I wasn't a part alien. In retrospect, it seems a little naive, but a lot was happening at once, and my mind was racing with all kinds of possible scenarios. I was slowly becoming more and more impatient as well. I wanted to know the whys of this project. Why have all these people been selected for this project? What's the ultimate purpose? That's a good question. Unfortunately, I have no answer for you. Most of us only know enough to do our assigned jobs. The long-term goals are only known by a handful of level 1 personnel, of which I am not one.